On the show today, we have SWM's very own Haley Rebel talking about low-hanging fruit when it comes to contract negotiations. She explains what this means and much, much more. So check it out. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we're talking contract negotiations with SWM's Haley Rebel. I love the last name, Haley. Love the last name.
Hi, Mike. So good to be here and excited to talk about all things contracts.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is a very important part of business today, and especially with credit unions dealing with vendors and vice versa, that type of stuff. So it's really, really important. But the topic here that at hand is low-hanging fruit of contract negotiation. So I want to get this out of the way real quickly here. So what is the low-hanging fruit here of contract negotiations? What do you mean by this statement? I'm very curious.
Yeah, I mean, we say this around the office all the time because we see so many credit unions just go and they sign these contracts as is. And we're like, there's low-hanging fruit. If you just negotiate these a little bit, there's so much low-hanging fruit that you can just grab and take and get so much better provisions and get yourself so many better protections that you're not stuck in a position and that if, unfortunately, things go wrong, you have those protections built in.
Got it.
And it's low-hanging fruit. Everybody's willing to negotiate, right?
So exactly.
They want you to think that they're not, but almost every vendor, they are willing to negotiate that contract.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. So when it comes to vendor negotiations, how do you protect your credit union when engaging with startup vendors, especially the startup vendors? So how do you, what's the protection here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, startups are huge right now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, there's new fintechs popping up every day, it feels like. And some of these fintechs have established clients and they know what they're doing. Some of them tell you they know what they're doing and we're really just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to get there, right? And
but
they have such good technology and so much innovation is coming out of these fintechs that it's definitely something that all financial institutions should be getting into because you want to stay at the forefront of technology. Mm-hmm. But we also just want to make sure that we have contractual protections in those contracts that if things go wrong, we can jump on it and get out of those. Because at the end of the day, all the promises can be made verbally, but you have a piece of paper,
four corners. Put your name on the dotted line for sure.
Yeah, put your name on the dotted line. And if it doesn't say anything in there about getting you live, if they've never gotten somebody live, then what? What if you're the first one, you're the guinea pig? We want something in there that says at least some sort of timeline. Hey, if you can't get us live in 2 years, we're going to get out of this contract somehow.
Yeah, 2 years is a long time in the fintech world. I think 2 weeks is a long time in the fintech world. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. And some of these startups that haven't been able to get people live yet, just because they're so new, we give them the leeway. We want to make sure that there's some time, depending on the product, of course. But, you know, we want to make sure that you also are able to have that out of that contract so that we're able to protect you in that situation.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And having said that, I mean, so what are some common themes that you guys are seeing with new vendors these days? Because I'm like you said, there's a lot of them out there. So what are you guys seeing out there that's common?
Yeah. I mean, I think just with the pandemic, we're seeing such a focus on new technology, right? And so we're seeing so many vendors that typically credit unions might not have thought to engage before, but now we're looking at more fintech lending origination, right? And getting into those deals with how are you going to buy those loans that was similar to your indirect lending program before, but now we're looking at a different model of the same thing. And so there's that. One of the things that I think is so exciting right now is seeing how many credit unions are really getting engaged in CUSOs. And we have, the industry has a story to tell too. We don't have to rely on the fintechs and the banks, but the credit unions, you know, band together, tell your story, figure out what works best for your members, and seeing these new CUSOs pop up and really get the focus from credit union perspective, I think is great. And
I'm a huge proponent of the CUSO model. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So
I think I think having members being so member focused and having it be so centered around credit unions is getting better products. And so I think the old CUSO model from back in the day was, you know, sometimes it was like, oh, I don't know if you really want to use a CUSO for your tech, but now we're seeing so much more advancement and innovation and seeing not only them getting directly involved in development, but also just investment. So there's just a lot of opportunity out there. So seeing a lot of trends with the CUSO movement, and I think it's great.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Yeah, talk about common. There's a lot of tech out there in the QSO.
So much. And it's honestly, it's great to just have more competition, right? Because when we're looking at like core providers, you see the same players over and over. There's really only so many options right now that you can go with. But the more competition, the better it's going to be. It's going to push those players to be better, and it's going to push us to get what we want. So,
and contract wise, Haley, from a QSO perspective, I mean, obviously they've already dotted all their I's and crossed all their T's as well, because of their member or their owner, their credit union owners will probably demand something like that their due diligence is done. Correct?
Yeah, usually. And so there's always different models. When you do the formation of the QSO itself, there's obviously somebody representing the QSO itself, getting someone involved to represent the credit union's interest in that as well, because you're really on both sides of that table at that point. You're an owner, you want the business to survive,
right?
But you're also going to be a user of this product and you want it to work. So there's two different hats you have to shift between when you're thinking about that and really get that nailed down of, you know, there's a balance. It can't be, you can't treat it like your normal big contract with these vendors where you push for everything, because if you push for unlimited liability, that hurts your ownership
interest, right?
So you have to balance that. And it's different. It's a different muscle that I think people are having to flex, but it's good. And I think they work on it a lot in the formation stages, and we kind of push that along from the credit union's perspective too, to make sure that it's better.
Yeah. I'm thinking from a comfort factor as well, you know, because the familiarity, you know, and being within the credit union ecosystem as well, there's got to be a comfort factor or a familiarity there, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you're with your peers in a lot of these situations, right? And you have similar interests, you have similar problems you want to make sure that you get in front of. So there's, it's definitely a comfort factor and making sure that everyone's kind of on the same page. But at the end of the day, you also want a product that works and you all feel the same about that.
Exactly. All right. Let's hop off the old QSO train and get back on for the next question here. Can you share with us how to make this process from engagement to signing more efficient for credit unions? Because it seems like there's a few bumps and hurdles along the way, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I get this question all the time, actually. It's so funny. It came up even with talking with vendors. I walk in the halls at some of the conferences and they're like, how do we make this easier? And I was like, if you draft your contracts a little bit less one-sided, it would get a little bit easier. But so I think honestly, in having counsel and having consultants that are really familiar with the vendors and the players, it makes the process go a lot easier. I've been an SW&M for nearly 10 years at this point, and I've only done fintech. So I negotiate contracts. I'd say that's like 80% of what I do. And so all of the vendors, their lawyers, they know me by name. And so they're aware of what it is. And so I can point to provisions and say, you know, I can tell you the section reference without even opening the document in a lot of cases, just because I dream about the little words on the page, which is such an odd thing, but you know, I love it. And so having that experience and that familiarity is just, it can really make the process a lot easier. Yeah. I can say, you know, this would be what you would get in an ideal world, but this vendor is not going to do that for you. So here's how we get to the middle ground. And this is where I think we should focus our efforts on so that we get to a fair contract. That is it perfect? It never is, but it can guide you in that a lot faster and get to that process, get that process rolling.
Yeah.
There's some things that we just can't control, right? I think everyone knows there's a resource strain from the vendor side on a lot of different issues. And I think their legal teams are suffering as much as their development teams sometimes. And it's just with the focus from all of the new tech coming out and everybody needing something, their lawyers are just as bogged down as anyone else. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there's just delays that, I don't know, I wish I could make it faster, but it's really just about having somebody that's really an expert in the field, I think is very helpful. And consultants too, we work really well with the consultants to make sure that we hit not only the legal items, but they're hitting a lot of that pricing and operational things to make it just streamline. And hey, we heard this happen. Our phone rings when the bad stuff happens too, not just getting into these things. So it's helpful to have that experience so that you get the right provisions in the contract to get those protections when you need them.
Yeah. I think you answered my next question, because my next question was like, what is the benefit of using counsel to mitigate contract issues? So you kind of answered it a bit there. If you want to expand on that, feel free.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think having counsel that knows what's going on.
Yep.
You call your lawyer when you want to get into this, what I call the marriage stage, and then you call them in the divorce stage when you really want to get out.
Yeah.
And so you're able to hear kind of that experience really early on and know during, it's almost like doing a little bit of due diligence with what do we kind of know? Are we seeing more of this where people are getting out more often than they're getting in? Mm-hmm. What do you see clients going towards? Are you doing a lot of this vendor's particular contract all the time? And so hearing those trends, I think, is helpful. And using counsel, we focus on the legal items, right? And so we read every word on that page to make sure that that contract has all the protections for you. Yeah. And so the consultants are massively helpful from an operational and pricing perspective. But I think counsel is the only way that you can really make sure that those protections get on that page so that you're able, if unfortunately something goes wrong, mm-hmm. to be able to get recourse and figure out how you're going to exit.
Yeah, you're covered.
You're covered. Yeah. I mean, even in the merger context, if you think about some of the penalties associated with early termination fees, they're massive. You can have these massive figures, but if you negotiate those up front, at least you can get those negotiated down and you know what those look like, because you are thinking about termination, which nobody wants to do when you're getting into these relationships. Mm-hmm. So you're able to negotiate that to kind of make it so that it's not as painful later when you're trying to exit.
Yeah, I think you're right too. You get all that stuff up front as soon as possible. So everybody kind of, you know, pardon the anecdote, but yeah, everyone has their cards on the table, so to speak. And so everyone knows, okay, this is the game we're playing. So let's go.
Yeah.
Either go or no go. So
yeah, exactly. And getting that all up front, it's just
nobody
wants to talk about the exit stage and the divorce stage when you're getting into it, but it's a lot easier to do now before you're trying to actually get out and things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. It just becomes harder and harder.
This is business. This is business for sure. So, so how significant is this issue in the credit union industry today? Because we talk about, a big topic in the industry is vendor management. How do credit unions handle all these vendors that want to do business with them, you know, technology wise, operations wise, legal wise. So how significant is this? Are you guys seeing it from your end?
I mean, I think it's huge. It's everything that I do, right? And your vendors, I think, in the past, credit unions have always used vendors, right? But now that technology is evolving so quickly, it is becoming so important to use different vendors. And it's not like a one-stop shop. You usually aren't getting everything from one place, but you have so many different vendors that do so many different things because they're able to really focus on what they're experienced at and give you a great product. But with that, you get hundreds of vendors. And so you're looking at hundreds of contracts a year, which is just millions and millions of dollars every year. Mm-hmm. And so it's significant, and you want to make sure that you are being a leader in innovation and getting those products that are going to make your members happy and get you high satisfaction. But at the same time, being those first people and being part of that innovative stage comes with risk you need to manage that risk to be able to use them and make sure that everything works out, because the salespeople, we love them, but they're salespeople, right? So there's
they want to close. That's right.
They want to close and they want to sell the product. And it usually is a great product. And we absolutely are doing more getting into contracts than getting out, but things happen and you just need to be prepared. And vendor management, I mean, it starts at the baseline. It's getting all of your teams together, and it really affects every aspect of the credit union.
Yeah. And my last question here, totally left field, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but in the beginning we were talking about a lot of the startups, the new vendors and stuff. And when you see a contract come across your desk from one of them, are you, since they're so new, do they have their ducks in a row as far as contract? Or are you just scratching your head sometimes like, what is that? Or because I mean, you're dealing with new companies here, and credit unions, they want to deal with, you know, obviously want the new shiny thing that'll attract more members and things like that. But sometimes, you know, the fintech is what they specialize in, not so much the contract, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
I don't know if you can answer that, but I'm just thinking.
Yeah, I'll answer vaguely, of course. We know how to dodge questions, lawyers, okay, right? No, it's, I think, honestly, I'm impressed with a lot of these startups. They have legal in the beginning to draft their contracts. The contracts look decent. And then you start negotiating because they got that first draft from their lawyer who's protecting their interest. Mm-hmm, and so everything is one-sided. I mean, look at these contracts and it was clearly drafted by a lawyer with their interest in mind and not the customer's interest in mind, because that's what that lawyer's job was to do. It was to make sure that that contract will protect the startup. And so it's fine. The contract looks good. There's a little bit, we see that sometimes, you know, as things are transitioning from like on-premise licensed software and transitioning more to cloud-based solutions, that really changes a lot of the terminology in a contract. Yeah. And I don't know if all vendors really realize that, and it changes the licensing terms, it changes the confidentiality protections, it changes a lot. And so I think in the startup world, that's a little bit of what I see in terms of, you know, that provision doesn't really make sense for what you're doing because it's not cloud-based. And so you took a contract that was perhaps originally for a licensed product and you tried to just tweak it a little bit, but it makes it really hard. Yeah. And so, yeah, but I think overall they engage counsel that's usually decent in terms of figuring it out. It just depends on who it is. And it honestly, it depends on the fintech size too, and how much resources they have in order to do it.
And the other side of the coin though, it must be a comfort working with somebody like you guys who are very familiar with the industry, who know the terminology, who have been doing this for a while. So having a new fintech come in and then working with you guys, like, hey, you know what, this works better with, you know, this credit union, that type of stuff. So that must be actually be kind of an asset, I would think, right? Or am I wrong here?
I would think so. I like to think so, but you know, I don't know. The vendors don't tell me that all the time. But I think it does provide good things for them to think about. I mean, even when looking at documents and it's like, you know, this really doesn't make sense, I definitely see sometimes the next time around it's been fixed. And so we don't have to have that same conversation the next time I'm negotiating it for a different client, because they clearly went back and looked at it and were like, you know what, you're right, that didn't make sense, we'll fix that because that's, you know, what it should have been to begin with. And so I think that provides a level of comfort for them as well.
Completely.
You know, we at least know what we're doing, because that makes it really hard when somebody's also trying to negotiate terms that are like, you know, that's not applicable. I don't know why you're asking for that. And so I think having that expertise is really helpful for everyone involved. And it really does streamline and make the process a lot more efficient.
Yep. Indeed. That's what we're all shooting for sure. All right, Haley. Well, and this is fantastic stuff. I never knew contract negotiations could be so interesting. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. So anything else to add on this one? Any final words of wisdom here?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just going to be interesting to watch how things play out. I think, you know, the CFPB came and said recently that they're going to try to regulate some of these fintechs. They recognized how one-sided these contracts are, and they're getting on top of vendors and saying, you know, you really should look at these. And they're telling, that was more in the banking space, but they're like, banks should get together and try to negotiate these. Use your leverage as a collective whole to try to get better terms, because when there's not a ton of competition, there's only so much you can do. And so I think it's going to be an interesting change in dynamic too, but I think it's going to be good. And it's nice to have that expertise there to help you. So we're happy to help any credit union that needs it and try to make it more streamlined and more efficient to the best ability that we can.
Indeed. Well said. All right, Haley, well, I'm gonna let you get back at it. Appreciate the time as always. Well done. Keep up the good work there, and look forward to the next chat.
Yeah. Great speaking with you. Thank you so much.
You are. This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders.